This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Every week, the list of presidential hopefuls grows. And it appears voters here in Michigan and across the country are, by and large, eminently unimpressed. Voter opinion polls are serving up some dismaying news to the candidates. More people don't like them than do like them. David Duilio is chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University, where he teaches courses on campaigns and elections, political parties, and interest groups. Dave, so good to have you with us.
Hi, Cindy. Nice to be with you.
The Detroit News WDIV survey that we learned about this week, did it surprise you that Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, and Scott Walker are all underwater in terms of being liked by voters?
It doesn't surprise me in the least. Frankly, elected officials and politicians are not well liked in the United States. Congress has record low approval ratings these days, whether it's 9% or 14%, it's bad. And I've seen data that show Congress has got worse approval ratings than used car salesmen and the IRS and even cockroaches. So to see that more people, both in the United States and in Michigan, have unfavorable views compared to favorable views about these folks, it's not a surprise at all.
It was kind of interesting. We stumbled across a blog posting by Washington Post blogger who took an admittedly tongue-in-cheek but rather telling approach. He plotted favorability ratings from the latest Washington Post survey against a survey of internet users about their feelings of top Hollywood villains. And in a nutshell, the Terminator, Darth Vader, and the Jaws shark all had higher favorability numbers than any politician or candidate, from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama to Donald Trump, who's way at the bottom. Now, is this because of the caliber of the leaders and the candidates, or is this because you get candidates jumping into the ring a year and a half before the election, or are we already sick of them and the season hasn't really started?
Well, I think there are a couple things going on here. One is that of those names that you mentioned, the Terminator, Darth Vader, the shark from Jaws, those are just cool characters. You know, I mean, who doesn't like the Terminator? Who doesn't like Darth Vader, even though he's a villain?
Sure.
They are in popular culture. They are familiar to us. And I think that that might be the crux of this, because one thing we have to be careful about in interpreting these data, while someone like Rand Paul or Marco Rubio is underwater in terms of their net favorability ratings, the thing that we have to remember is more voters have no opinion on them. For instance, Rand Paul has a 23% favorability rating from voters here in Michigan and a 36% unfavorable rating. That still means that 41% of folks in Michigan have no opinion of him. That is a key piece of information that we don't always get from just looking at the poll numbers. While he's underwater, he's not dead yet. He has got a chance to impress voters who don't know anything about him. That's less of a positive for someone like Hillary Clinton or even Jeb Bush. Hillary Clinton in Michigan has 39.3% favorable rating and a 47% unfavorable rating, which is close to being a majority of folks having a unfavorable view of her. That leaves only about 14% of folks who don't have an opinion. She has less room for error, if you will. The vast majority of folks in Michigan and the country have already established an opinion on her. Jeb Bush is similar, but still has almost a third of folks in Michigan who have not formed an opinion on him. So he's in better shape, but still underwater at 41.5% unfavorable rating. There's a little bit more to read into these numbers, and for some candidates who maybe are could be considered the lower tier or at least less well-known, they still have a chance to get out from being underwater and make some pretty big strides in terms of favorability.
Interesting. I'm talking with David Duilio, who's the chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University, as we look at some of the recent surveys looking at whether we like or dislike presidential hopefuls. I have to ask you, we hear, I know I've heard it in talking to people about the fact that, my word, we're not even going to vote until November 2016, and here we have one candidate after another jumping in, and people will say, boy, do I wish we did it the way the Brits do it. They call an election, they bang out the campaign in 5 weeks, and then we get back to the business of running the country.
Well, I think that that's a pretty widely held view in the United States, and it certainly does seem like we are always in campaign mode. We have more elections in this country than just about anybody else in the world. You know, we just had a very important one at the start of May with Proposal 1.
Right.
in an odd year when we don't typically expect elections to come up, but that was obviously a critical one. We vote very often, so there's a bit of voter fatigue in terms of people being sort of sick and tired of, didn't we just have an election?
Yeah.
Boy, the next one's coming up already. And certainly the candidates, folks who are in office and looking to get reelected, as well as those looking to maybe jump in for the first time or enter the fray, are folks who are always looking to the next election. So there's definitely a phenomenon that we might refer to in political science as the permanent campaign. So I think folks do get a little sick and tired of that. But we can't work it like the Brits do. We have this pesky little thing called the First Amendment that allows individuals and candidates for office or would-be candidates for office to talk about politics and talk about government in any way that they want at any time. If the federal government or the state government tried to limit a season of campaigning to a set number of weeks, I think that would be struck down immediately as an unconstitutional law.
Interesting. All right. Speaking of conversation, I want to get your thoughts on what we all recognize as the burgeoning number of websites out there delivering huge doses of snark when they talk about our elected leaders, about our candidates. And then, you know, people post those on Facebook walls and Twitter feeds. I saw someone commenting when we had another candidate declare his candidacy, not Donald Trump either. Okay. One more taking a seat in the clown car. How is that snarky, cynical attitude that we see on the web and in social media influencing our attitudes?
I don't think it has much of an impact at all. I think the folks that pay attention to that sort of thing are already interested in politics. They are already maybe even political junkies. They are folks who are going to turn out and vote no matter what. They already have established beliefs in all likelihood about candidates as well as issues. Where we would be concerned about those having an impact is if they were having an effect on how folks who might be coming into the electoral process for the first time or folks who don't have solidly formed opinions about candidates or issues, how those folks are affected. But the evidence that exists shows that that's really not the case.
So what do parties and candidates need to do to resonate with the undecideds, or one might even say that vast center in the bell curve of America's voters, not
sure.
Just to the party faithful who are already in the tent?
Well, as you know, there is a great deal of clutter in the realm of information, whether it's political information or other news information, sports information. All the information that exists today is much greater than it was 10, 20, certainly 40 or 50 years ago. What candidates and parties and outside interest groups have to do is cut through that clutter in a way to get the attention and focus the attention of potential voters. And they have to do that by talking about issues that are important to the voters. If voters hear candidates discussing issues that are important to them, they'll pay attention. If candidates are talking about issues that are not relevant to the public or not at the top of their list in terms of importance, voters will tune out.
Playing to the party faithful. I'm thinking of a recent incident in Michigan when Ted Cruz was making a campaign appearance, made his standard stump joke about Joe Biden, got a big laugh, and then got called out after because Vice President Biden's son had just died. Big laugh from the party faithful, but is that the kind of thing that is really needs to be avoided if you're going to talk to that big center of undecideds?
Oh, it certainly does, and that was clearly an unfortunate mistake for Ted Cruz that got him in some hot water, deservedly so. He was in a friendly room with a friendly crowd, and folks that vote in primary elections and those folks that vote in general elections are a very different bunch. Candidates who are in the primaries play to those folks, but then have to get back to the middle during the general election.
In a short period of time.
Yes, and they will very quickly have to pivot back to then start talking to the middle. Candidates have to be very careful, and they have to choose their words in a way that won't get them in trouble down the road.
Dave Duilio is chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University. Among his books, Campaigns from the Ground Up, and For Better or Worse, How Professional Political Consultants Are Changing Elections in the United States. Dave, thanks so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Cindy.